And then yeah, net pulling.
Time is 5:28. We will get started in 2 minutes.
Oh, the answer. Oh. Yes, I love it, like Jeopardy.
Right, pens down, everybody. The time is 5:30. It is Thursday, October 10th. I would like to call this regular South Whitby Fire EMS Board of Commissioners meeting to order. The first item on our agenda is approval of the agenda. I believe we have a few additions. To my knowledge, we are going to add to the new business section a presentation by Lieutenant Wilkie on PFAS. And at the end of our new business section, we will be discussing an all-county fire commissioner meeting. Are there any other amendments to the agenda for today?
I move we approve the agenda as amended.
Second.
All right, all those in favor?
Aye.
The ayes have it. Moving on, the next order of business is public input. I'm not seeing any members of the public for today. The next agenda item is the consent agenda. I do believe we have some discussion here.
Yes, I would request that the meeting minutes for the September the 14th, 2024 meeting have the track changes copy of the strategic plan added to them so that people can identify what got changed. And add a note on anything that was deleted as to reasons for it being deleted so that there's a record.
And I propose that those minutes for September 14th be delayed or put on the agenda for the November meeting of the board.
I hear a motion.
Second.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The ayes have it. I will also add for both of the minutes in terms of Robert procedure. We need to just update who made the motion and the second, as I believe some of them are misstated, but they're easily corrected. And I've talked to Sherry about that. So.
So the vote we just had was to suggest the changes that I'd suggested, or is that the motion to approve the consent agenda?
The motion that we just approved is to move the September 14th
Okay.
minutes for updating to the following regular meeting. And then my next point is that some of the motions are not correctly noted in terms of who made the motion, who seconded it, which can easily be revised. I've talked to Secretary Schroeder about that.
So this is for both regular meeting of September 12th and September
Yes,
14th.
yes. So they need to be revised.
Okay. I propose that we have both minutes for for the September 12th and September 14th be on the agenda for the November regular board meeting.
Very good. Do I have a second?
Seconded.
There we go. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. The minutes will be reviewed at the next meeting with their stated updates. Otherwise, are we ready? Do we need to approve the consent agenda now? I believe that's where we're at.
I move the board to approve the consent agenda as amended.
Seconded.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The ayes have it. The consent agenda is approved as amended. And moving on, the next order of business is unfinished business, and we have a presentation from Holly with Archbright. Holly Eckert. Let's see, and there's somebody who wants to be admitted.
There she is.
Hi.
Hi there. Could I share my screen because I have a short PowerPoint?
We will give you host privileges.
Thank you.
All over the place.
And let's see. It is not working yet.
Bear with us a moment. We're trying to sort out the technology. We're here.
Okay, got it.
Now give it a try.
Okay. Yes, here we go. Great. Okay, well, thank you so much for welcoming me today. I've been talking with Chief Walsh for a few weeks about how we might be able to help and support. And here's a summary of what we've been talking about. So I work at Archbright. I've been there 11 years, so hopefully I'll be able to field your questions. Feel free to interrupt me anytime as we go through the presentation. So I wanted to show this slide just to show you that we have been helping employers in Washington State for the last 88 years. And as you can see here, there are a few more states that we have added to our coverage area in the last few years. So in talking with Chief Walsh, here's a summary of what we discussed, that the department did not ever have a fully trained full-time HR staff person. And that may have led to some gaps in what should be there. We talked about payroll needing more consistency. We talked about state benefits and an audit of deferred comp. We talked about reviews and raises. Is everything being done fairly? And is it legal as well? And overall compliance audit, such as things like HR files, all the right posters. There are many, many, many regulations that if you don't have a fully trained HR staff that slip through the cracks, and we'd like to help you with those to make sure you don't get in any trouble, and also to make sure that the employees are getting all the notices that they should be. And then also this bigger question of how to set up and maintain HR. Do you need a part-time HR person? Can it be outsourced? Can someone take it on as partial duties? So we would take a look at how the department functions and how we could recommend some solutions to you. And then we talked about a couple of other things, which I don't think we're going to go into detail here today, but we can also support with L&I claims management. So we can take that off the chief and deputy chief's plate because that can take a lot of time. And we have a team of about 11 claims managers that do claims management all day, every day. So they can do it really well and they can do it really quickly. And then labor support. So we have 6 attorneys who give employment law advice, but also work with employers in unionized environments. So anything from bargaining, if there's a grievance process, if there's an arbitration, we can help with all of that. But then also just any sorts of questions that come about, can we not do this in a union environment? Any questions so far?
Just a quick question. You're representing Southwoodby Fire and EMS. you're setting policy, recommending policy for the district. What type of quality assurance, if you recommend something and it goes contrary to what the law or whatever says, how is South Whidbey Fire and EMS made whole if there's a problem resulting on a policy that you've recommended that we take?
We have professional liability insurance for that.
Okay. Figured you did, but we need to know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the solution that I'm going to propose has two parts of it. The first is some HR consulting. All of our HR consult. First of all, we have a team of about 15 HR consultants that all have at least 10 years of progressive experience in HR. So they have been at different companies. They've been in different industries. They've seen it all. And so you will be working with one consultant. And if that person doesn't know the answer to one particular question you may have, they can consult with all their peers. So we have 15 consultants. We've got 5 HR advisors and 6 attorneys, and they are all helping each other in the event that someone doesn't know the answer to some particular question. So what we talked about is having the consultant work for you one day a week for 6 weeks in 2024. That's just how the schedule worked out. And to start off in person so they can, you know, do the audit, understand the filing system and all that, and then perhaps going remote. It will save you a little bit of money. The there is a small just mileage fee. Your consultant will likely be coming from Seattle. So it's just a little less expensive for you, and we would pass through the tolls as well. So not a big deal, but both options are available. So that's part one. Any questions on this so far? Okay. And then this is where I'm hoping it doesn't get confusing, but it may. So we're a membership organization. You do not have to purchase a membership in order to purchase the consulting. However, it will cost less overall if you do. And I have a slide here that has the price comparisons. The other thing is, if you're having a consultant one day a week, then what do you do the other 4 days of a week? If some HR emergency arises, you're going to want to have some advice. And that is what you get with all levels of membership. We're looking at the silver membership here, this HR hotline. So you can designate a few leaders in the department to be able to call the HR hotline whenever they need advice. The hotline is open 8 to 5 on all business days. And if you need to leave a message, the turnaround time for calls is within 2 hours. There are a whole host of other benefits here. There's also a safety hotline if you have any questions about safety. There's a salary if you want to look up comparable salary data for your non-represented employees. We'll send you out compliance alerts if there are any federal or Washington state legal changes. You'll also get $1,000 public training credit if you want to send anyone. Most of the classes are virtual, to some kind of leadership training or HR training. And a handbook review, you'll get, it says 15 hours, but since you're joining in Q4, it will be 5 hours of employment law advice or labor advice. And that 20% discount, that is what is makes it cost less to have the consulting with the membership rather than without. I just wanted to show you a few of our members. So we actually have about 2,000 members all together, and here are some of them that you might recognize. So here comes the pricing. Since you are just going to be joining for 2 months, if you decide to, you'll just pay for 2 months of membership in 2024. So this is what it comes out to for those 2 months. And then if you don't join membership, you can get that consultant for $10,320. That's one day a week for 6 weeks here in 2024.
I'd like to pause real quick. Can we move the video so it's not blocking the right side of her screen? I think there's just some information that's getting cut off while you're presenting.
Mm-hmm.
There. That'll work. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So you can see what the total is to do it as a non-member or with the three different levels of membership. Now, there is a little catch to this, is that joining membership in the fourth quarter requires that membership is continued through the next calendar year at the same tier. So if you're signing up for silver membership, it will be $790 this year. And then you're also committing to next year for $4,740 for the next year. Now, most of our members join and want to continue. If you want the option to not continue, then you could also do this engagement as a non-member, but then you also lose out on the other 4 days a week HR coverage. You know, most employers who don't have a full-time, fully trained HR person love to have our hotline and keep our memberships year after year so they can have access to that. So silver membership, if you joined at silver, you'd get 15 hours a year. If you had some, I'm knocking on wood that you won't have any big legal problems, but if you did, you could upgrade to gold mid-year, but you cannot downgrade mid-year. The other thing is if the consultant makes some good progress and then you say, oh, we will want you to help us fix this up, we want to extend, that's completely fine as long as you let us know before their engagement is done that you want to extend, then you will have that same consultant. So you'll have a good sense of continuity with that. Let me pause again for questions.
One clarification question. On the previous screen at the top, you had a phrase that I've not heard, Mozo.
Mm-hmm. Mozo, yes. So Mozo is an online platform that is available only to Archbright members. It has 500 documents that you can use. So there are forms and templates that you can use for HR things. There are keynotes, which is background information on different HR compliance topics. And then there are sample policies. So if you need to adopt a policy or you're looking at revising any of your HR policies, they are all in there.
So what is MOSO an acronym for?
It's not an acronym for anything. It's actually an Italian word that means hub.
Okay.
And we see Mozo as a hub for our members to connect with us. There's also 170 on-demand trainings in Mozo. There are some very handy HR, foundational HR trainings. If someone in the department, like a current employee, is going to be taking on maintaining the HR maintaining HR, they can get a lot of training in here at no charge. There's also anti-harassment training, supervisory training. So a lot of good stuff in there as well.
Thanks.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
One question. These plans give you 8 hours of HR. What are the rates if you go over that amount? For the year and you're needing additional services, how are those billed?
Let me clarify. Memberships don't give you any amount of consulting time. So let me switch back to this slide. And that's why the membership is on one line and then the consulting is on another line. So you can keep going with the consulting after 6 weeks or you can end the consulting. So what you get with the HR hotline is you get unlimited calls. So you can call them every day. If you have an HR problem every day, you can call them every day.
Yeah, I understand that. But if we're going over our 8 hours, what happens eventually? I assume it averages out a bit. So if you use, you know, 10 and then 6 the next, that sort of pans out. But if you use your consultant more than one day per week, how does that get billed?
Thank you for the question. Our consultants are usually fully booked in 8-hour days. So you won't be going over because they're going to be working for other employers on the other days they're not assigned to you. They're going to work one day a week for 8 hours for you and not available to you on the other days.
I think Holly, correct me if I'm wrong, but one way to explain this would be for this consulting period is they're typically doing this for 2 months or for the 6 weeks in this case as sort of a project to review everything and create a report at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't, my feeling on it is, like you said, they'll just be working for us those days to generate that at the end. And then the extension would be off the end of that if it were.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the per day, it looks like whatever that breakdown of 8256 for non-members, so it would be, I don't do math fast in my head, but if we divided that by 6, yeah.
And I see one that's highlighted, the silver. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I'm just curious for our own path. Why is that highlighted? Is that where we think we're headed?
Yeah.
So. That is highlighted because it's the lowest price when you put membership and consulting together.
I see.
That seemed like the best deal. And speaking with Archbright, for us, there's a big jump when you go up to gold for the whole year. In this case, mm-hmm. It doesn't look like it, but it just goes from 4 to about over 12,000. And I think silver offers a lot of the same services. And if we were to cap out on that and go, this is so much, we're going to move up.
More.
Yeah, we could bump it up to gold partway.
And so if I could just get some clarification, sometimes I just like simplicity and laying it out again. The consulting for the 1 day a week for 6 weeks, we said that's kind of a project. It's kind of reviewing everything that we have. And maybe that sets the stage for moving forward with our membership in 2025. Can I just get a layout of what to expect with that? We will see ABC.
Oh, the deliverables from the consultant.
What are the deliverables?
Yeah, let's go back up to this slide. So it's a little hard to say before we get in there, but there's going to be an audit of the payroll process, how that's happening, and recommendations for that. The state benefits and deferred comp will be audited and see if any remediations or a new process needs to be implemented. Same thing with reviews and raises, a compliance audit. So that's like, we're going to ask you some questions about your hiring process. We're going to look at your employee files. We're going to take a look at your handbook. It's not a full handbook review, but although you could have a full handbook review included in the silver membership. So it's an audit of all these things. And then there will be a report and recommendations, and then also how to get an HR function set up and maintained, recommendations for that.
So it's an opportunity to find out where we can improve.
Exactly.
Because I would guess we wouldn't be here if we felt like we were doing everything right. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
You always do better.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Question.
Yep.
Question on the consulting. You mentioned we have, 8 hours for a week during this period. And then you said that the consultants have other customers so that they would not be available. In the case that we needed something more than the 8 hours, how is that handled if they're the particular consultant we're working with is detailed to other customers for the rest of the week?
Yeah. So there are a couple of options. One is it could be that the consultant has another day available and you can just add it. That would be super simple. If that's not possible, then we could talk about, okay, do you want to go up to 2 days a week? If so, does it work if we have 1 day with the original consultant and add another day with another consultant? That could work if they're really working on separate kinds of projects. Or it could be, okay, your original consultant is not available 2 days a week, but you really need 2 days a week, then we could just switch consultants for you. And the other end, the other way that I'm looking at this is you've had 0 hours of consulting so far. So whatever's been waiting for however long, maybe can just wait until the next week and then you can add more weeks at the end. So that's another possibility.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
When the consulting is in person, is the travel time part of the 8-hour day, or is that in addition to?
The travel time is not charged. Lucky you.
Okay. Thanks.
Just mileage at the IRS rate and tolls.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Were you through? Where are we at on the presentation, Holly?
Yep, I've got a couple more slides. This is the main part, just to give a little bit more information. So this is the HR hotline that the leaders in the department will be able to call for any advice when the consultant is not working for you. Mazo, that's our online platform. I told you a couple things. It has the resource library of the 500 documents, the salary survey, video training library, job description builder, a couple of other things.
Who gets to use that seat in Mazo?
You get two seats and you get to choose who uses them. And then...
Would that be you? Would that be...
We need to probably look at it more, but likely it would be Mary Kay and possibly myself.
Okay.
It just depends. Yeah.
And then you'll get an additional 3 seats for the video training library. So if there's someone that you'd like to take some of the training, professional development or supervisory training, you can assign that to them as well. They won't have access to the other features in Mazo. You do get 5 hours of employment law advice. So, I mean, for the rest of this year, if you're at Silver, and then if you're at Silver next year, you'll get 15 hours. They can help with all sorts of things. They can review documents. They can review contracts with you if you have a tricky termination situation. And that's included in the membership fee, which is a fantastic deal if you have ever paid for lawyers by the hour, which I'm pretty sure you have. Mm-hmm. Okay, now this is where it gets a little bit confusing also, because now if you look in the lower left corner, you'll see it says 2025. So the membership prices for next year are staying the same. So that's easy. Bronze, silver, and gold, they're all the same prices. What's included is a little bit different. So let's just look at silver. You'll get 50 learner seats instead of 3, but you won't get that $1,000 training credit for the instructor-led training. Most of the things are the same. Platinum is a new level of membership, and this is really for the unionized employer because it's the gold membership with 40 hours a year of labor services. So that can be union bargaining, that can be arbitration, or hearing representation. So if you start out at silver and then decide you want to upgrade to gold, which will give you unlimited employment law advice. It will also give you labor advice, but it won't give you the labor services, meaning the arbitrations, hearings, and collective bargaining. No need to make any decision about that now. I just wanted to let you know your options for next year. And that, pardon me, go ahead.
Thank you.
Okay. And then we also, as I said, have a team of claims administrators. So we can do it two ways. One is if you have a tricky claim, you want us to take a look at it and you want us to manage it, we can do that a la carte, or you can sign up for a service and we will literally take over, meaning we'll get all your mail from L&I, process it, do all your stay at work reimbursements. If you're able to do that, we'll appeal claims and make protests when we think there's anything fishy. I think, Chief, you said maybe we look at that again next year, which is completely fine. You can sign up for this. It's not on the yearly basis, so you can sign up for it in any month of the year. And then we have some different hotlines, the HR hotline, the safety hotline. These are for members. And then if you are registering for a class or need login support, that's available. And here is my contact information at the end. Any questions while I'm here?
I don't know if it's a question for you or for Chief Walsh, but we probably had some references for similar districts. How did they pan out?
So we did have a reference from Island County 1, Camino, and they have just started with Archbright. So far, so good, but hasn't been very long. I see a couple of local customers of yours are South County and North County are two of the biggest fire district employers, probably in Western Washington, and we've heard from Spokane as well, and it sounds like they're all very happy with the service, even indeed districts that have full HR and staff, and of course, labor attorneys continue to use Archbright, it sounds like, for their services. They find it to be a good value.
Thank you.
Of all the members on here, I'd say South County, I think, has used us the longest of the ones on this slide.
And their administrative building alone is like, I don't know, huge. I mean, they have a lot of staff already, so.
In terms of our meeting today, thank you very much for the overview. I know when the chief and I talked earlier today, we were just discussing the transparency of this and making sure that the board is informed of if we should choose to move ahead. What's next?
So if you look in your board packet, I put together the basic pricing breakdown, which is mostly what Holly has already gone over here this evening. The total for 2024 is $9,046 estimated. We have currently, that would come out of consulting services account, which you see the next bar down there. We budgeted $66,000. We have 17.4% remaining for the year at $11,475, which would cover this. So we could do this within budget. Because it is a larger spend, and also I want the board to be fully aware of this program and what we're looking at, I want to present that to you nevertheless. And additionally, we would be committing to 2025 for service with this. And so I wanted to ask the board for approval on that because the budget is not complete. However, the entire amount for the budget, which has been already put into the 2025 budget, is $4,800, which I feel is a good deal for us. So at that point, my ask to the board would be if you have any further questions, and if not, if the board would just make formal board approval of moving forward with Archbright.
So a clarification, this is not listed as a actionable item, saying unfinished business, we got the presentation. So is this something that we can approve tonight, or do we need to publish it for the next a board meeting.
I believe we could approve this tonight. As I said, it's within budget, and we would need to move forward with this now if we're going to do this by November 1st. But as I said, for this year, it's in budget. It would just be making a board motion and approval would put it into the record. We'd have it here, keeps the auditors happy, and keeps you all informed.
My understanding is that because it's below 10,000, you could move ahead with this without our approval. But right now you're asking for our approval because it is a higher budget item. It's mm-hmm. new. And you would like to know that we are good with this decision, even though it's not required.
Correct.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to make a motion that we approve the Archbright HR Consulting silver membership for the figure of $9,046 for HR services for the rest of this year.
Seconded.
Do we need to amend that to also reflect that it part of doing it this year means that we are subscribing to next year?
Please.
Okay.
I accept that change to my motion.
Do I have a second?
Seconded.
Very good. All those in favor of approving a contract with Archbright?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it, and the motion carries.
I commend Chief Walsh for moving this forward. The last thing you want to do is to not be correct on your labor practices. And I think we can all agree if a lawyer is coming after us and we have to get our lawyers to defend ourselves, nobody wins.
All right. That is our one item for unfinished business. Holly, thank you very much for your presentation and your time.
Thank you. We look forward to working with you.
All right. Cheers. I believe we are ready to move on to new business. Thumbs up. With that, I would like to hand it over to Lieutenant Wilkie for a presentation.
Good evening, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I'm getting over a cold, so I apologize for my voice. It's a little in and out. My understanding is that there was some questions about our bunker gear, concerns regarding PFAS, and bunker gear replacement plans over the next few years. So I spoke with our representative today from Ellen Curtis, which is where we have purchased some items of our PPE, which is personal protective equipment. I talked to him in detail about the PFAS concerns that we have about our Lion bunker gear, which is what we're currently in. Up to 2020, the inside liner that touches our skin used a moisture barrier spray that does contain a PFAS chemical. It's not long lasting after years of wearing it and washing it and things like that. It does wear out. However, it still does expose us to PFAS. After talking to him about that, I think also talking to him in detail about the different fabrics that they use, the technology behind it, some other factors I was considering when swapping bunker gear vendors was the durability. Currently, we send people to the Washington State Academy, and they go through a couple sets of bunker gear while they're up there, which is just not financially smart. And I think we can do better. And after talking to Jason, who's the representative from Ellen Curtis, he also agrees. So that was one of the factors that went into deciding to go with Globe Bunker Gear. As far as the PFAS concerns go, farther than just that spray, any bunker gear after 2020 that's in our current stock, we don't have to worry about. They stopped using that spray. So I took those factors into consideration when we talk about replacement over the next few years. Anything up to 2020, we don't really have to worry about replacing as soon as some of the other stuff we have expiring in the next couple years. The shelf life for bunker gear is 10 years. So we have, as you can see, I think that Chief Walsh handed out this. Yeah. So there's just some tables here showing you, you know, if it expires in 2024, we purchased it in 2014. So for our coats and our pants, I show here each year how many sets of each thing or how many pairs of each thing are expiring. That moving forward, we would have to replace those 2024, 2025, and so on. So I've laid that out here. You can see that. I'm not going to spend a bunch of time explaining it, but if you have any questions, feel free to stop me. So in calculating the gear that we need to order, some things that I took into consideration, the ones that we have expiring that need replacement, our new hires that we plan on hiring over the next couple of years, any new volunteer recruits that plan on going through Fire Academy, and also considering that care, maintenance, cleaning, repairs, and things like that take bunker gear out of service, having a second set of bunker gear for our more active responders to be able to change into while the other one's being washed or whatever makes it a lot easier, especially when we have people at multiple stations. So those are all things that I took into consideration. You can see in the tables everything I've laid out for you. Is there any questions you guys have that I didn't answer? Any more concerns?
Lieutenant Wilkie, could you also, sorry, I know you guys have questions, but you covered some stuff earlier today that I was hoping you could talk a little bit about the PFAS exposure versus.
So one of the things that Jason brought forward was, as far as the PFAS concerns in our bunker gear, it's not as big of a factor coming from the materials in our bunker gear. It's more so the smoke and things like that that we come in contact with in our day-to-day jobs. Structure fires, hazmat incidents, things like that, where we're exposed to those chemicals more frequently than the average person, and even more frequently than the person working in the factories with these materials that our bunker gear is made of. So there's more that we can do about protecting ourselves from those chemicals as far as care, maintenance, routine cleaning, and things like that of our bunker gear, our helmets, our respiratory protection that will help with that exposure over time. So as much as PFAS might be a concern, it's not the number one concern when it comes to our bunker gear specifically. So there's not like an immediate need to replace every set of bunker gear we have right now. Staggering it over the next couple years makes a little bit more sense financially. And it's also not this like urgent need that we have. There's ways that we can prevent that exposure and that danger through care and maintenance of our PPE.
So Lieutenant Wilkie, appreciate your presentation. During the budget meetings, I was harping regularly on this to make sure that, speaking as representing the public, we ask our firefighters to put themselves in harm's way. And it when hearing about this PFAS issue, it's, I mean, wow, if we don't know about it, you know, okay, that's one thing. But when, speaking as board member, become aware of it, how do we do what's necessary to protect you all? So what I'm hearing from you just said, it's both the SOP for care and feeding of bunker gear and other things that goes probably as much or more than replacing the bunker gear, but at the same time, we want to remove any and all sources of the PFAS to you all. And so I commend everybody here to look to finding a solution. So we've talked about the bunker care issue, but are there processes that we're not doing with the care and feeding of the bunker gear and other things that we need to do?
The only thing that I would say we're not doing is there is an option for an extensive cleaning process that we send our gear in once a year to the company. It's available if we send it in for repairs, they do it. So for instance, we have a set of bunker gear that has a hole in it, or they can sew back up and put back in service for us because it still has a shelf life. They will run it through that cleaning process for us. It's part of that service. The downfall of that is if we aren't already sending it in for a repair, we're taking an entire set of bunker gear out of service, right, which is not available for our responders to wear.
Yeah.
Other than that, we decon at our gear at the scene, and then we're immediately washing it. We shower You know, we scrub everything, we clean everything. I would say right now the process is in place for after a structure fire or an event where we come in contact with carcinogens. We're very aware and good at cleaning ourselves up and protecting ourselves so that we limit exposure to those carcinogens.
So just, don't want to belabor, it sounds like we're doing both your procedures and then the replacement is, it's acceptable to you and the troops.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Yeah. Any other questions or anything?
Thank you for your presentation.
Yeah.
Thank you.
All right. Our next order of business is the chief's report.
Thank you, Chair Erickson. So looking at the chief's report for October, covering data up through September, we see we have continued increased call volume year over year. I think there's a couple of reasons for that. Obviously, we're just having more call volume. Also, we're seeing more frequent callers, frequent utilizers of the service, I think. We have had a couple that are high frequency callers in the last couple of months. And so we've been working through to help those folks. But one of the missing pieces, I'm kind of going off on a little bit of a tangent here, but one of the missing pieces, I think, in Island County is we don't have a good community paramedic program or program that gets out and helps to identify resources with these folks and get them the resources they need to reduce the reliance on 911. There is a committee that we are teamed up with at this point for the county, but I think, you know, going forward in the future, that's something we'll need to think about, is how we can get involved in a community paramedicine program here on Whidbey Island like they have over on Kameno.
That is something I'm looking to incorporate into our next period of our strategic plan.
I like it. That's great. Volume over month, we're up again, also up for September. We've been busier with some of those frequent callers. Also, I would like to give a nod to Chief M and also the lieutenants for being diligent and auditing the calls that we're charting and making sure that we're capturing all the data that we need to. We're not missing calls. So that's helping us to more perfectly capture the data. So
when you say missing calls showing up on your chief's report.
Right. So
in other words, the documenting what's happened so that we have a record of what's going on or what has gone on.
Exactly. So we can rely on data from dispatch, especially coming up on the end of the year, to go, hey, how many calls did we have this year? And kind of tracking the calls that go through. We separately track, and I get the data for these calls out of our reporting systems. So we want to make sure that we reconcile those regularly and they're matching up, and we're not having things fall through the cracks. Like, say, a service call comes in. Oh, you know, I thought I saw a car broken down alongside the road. Whatever it is, a call. A lot of them are non-acuity, you know, lower acuity calls. We get called out, and I, you know, guilty as charged, as some of the chief officers will end up responding to those, and maybe, oh, you resolve the issue. Well, I thought so-and-so was going to chart that. So we want to make sure that doesn't happen. And I asked Chief M to dig into that a couple of months ago. And yeah, I think we identified some, right? And we're making some progress on that. And he also actually just went to a day-long symposium on our charting software this week to learn better how to generate reports from the data we have and make sure we're inputting the data correctly. So sorry, I got a little off topic there, but I think it's important to understand why some of those changes are occurring. One thing I'd like to do is provide you guys with this. I'm providing you with the times here on the next page, the percentage of incident types, but also the times. But I think we need to start trending these, especially as we increase staffing, because you can look at the times, but they're not super meaningful. And month to month, we all have months with very few fire incidents, and So trending the times becomes a little tricky. Fourth seat coverage, we're back up a little bit from August. However, we are still suffering with one firefighter being at Fire Academy. So he's due to return in November. And hopefully we'll have a little bit better coverage. It is important to note, as I look through this, there are certain days we have a lot of folks here riding along, and we're having great participation in the MERV program. That's really not captured on this. So although our numbers are down, we're still seeing some good volunteer participation. Additionally, I think we lose some folks during periods like EMT Academy going on right now. I was just asking about one of our responders. It's like, hey, I haven't seen her around. Well, she's in EMT Academy. Oh, well, that explains things. It's harder to do shifts.
Are you able to quantify the MERV participation?
Yeah, we absolutely can.
It's up, as in it's happening 50% of the days in a month, or I don't know how to quantify it, but.
Yeah, it would be a wag at this moment, but I can definitely do that and bring it forward on these reports. I think it'd be a good idea. But we have, so for instance, we had, I would say, one individual who was really, really active with the MERV program a year ago, and now we have three or four who are really active with it. So
yeah,
it's being checked out all the time.
It's been a really good program.
Yes.
And
getting response down, it's been a big help.
Well, we have three and four calls fairly regularly now, and so we're covering calls that we might drop otherwise. So
yep.
Is there, how many do we have? One, how many MERVs do we have?
Well, we have a MERV, we have 36, 31, and 32. So we have 36 is often used here.
Okay. So theoretically they could be all checked out at once. So I guess I don't know if that's a way to quantify it.
Yeah. We have two that are regularly checked out.
Okay.
Okay. So I have the list. I just need to take the data and put it into a form that you can see.
Okay.
Chief, question. I see where we have what you've identified as good intent calls. I assume these are ones where the car's on the side of the road and they call 911.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way working through the dispatch or whatever to be able to quantify, to try to be able to say, okay, is this something that we need to send, an apparatus out to, or is that just not done in the 911 world?
No, it is, and we try to do that. They have a program called ProQA that they use for EMS calls, and it takes them through an algorithm to try to determine the level of acuity, and then those are categorized from Omega up to Echo response, ABCDE response, and then an agency can determine based on those acuity codes what they're going to send on calls. That whole process can be a lot for a district transitioning between volunteer staffing and mixes of part-time staffing into full-time staffing and staff stations. And that's something that we're working through now. Chief Nye is working on rewriting our run cards. And so, yeah.
Okay.
More to follow on that, but it is a process that we're aware of.
Yeah, I figured you were. It's just concerning if you're going to a good intent call and then you've got, mission critical call, and we're not able to serve that because of the responding to the sincere but uncritical call on the part of the good intent caller.
Well, we haven't even gotten into iPhone crash notifications. We are also doing service calls for regular service calls for smoke detectors now. That program's been super successful, and I think it's awesome, and that does contribute to call volume. recruitment and retention, we have no one ready for approval at this board meeting, but we have 7 applications in various states of process right now. So it's a pretty healthy number. And those folks coming on now would either be already trained or they'll be coming on for the Winter Fire Academy.
How does that figure of 7 reflect over the past period? Is that sort of a good, it's obviously a good figure, but is it norm or is that above what we've been seeing?
I think it's a little bit above. Yeah, we're presenting to you 3 or 4 in process. So we had a few new ones come in. And then the upcoming events I have, I feel like I'm missing something because we've only got one, which is the trunk or treat coming up on the 26th.
Can the you other, tell me what time that will be?
5:30? You're on it. 5:30.
Thank you.
Yeah. And then a number of folks are out doing fire prevention in the school system right now. I know I sent out an email about that earlier, but a lot of pictures are starting to filter back from it. And I think they're doing a great job and folks are having a lot of fun and educating the children. So I'd like to acknowledge that.
Right. Thank you for that report, Chief. The next item on our agenda is the 2025 preliminary budget, the budget changes. Should that be 20? Is that correct?
It's the preliminary budget presentation. This document just is presenting the one in the packet is showing the changes year over year.
Okay, great.
Doesn't look like the one we sent out is in the packet, but we did send out the preliminary budget for 2025 a week ago, I believe. Yep, a week ago, I believe. We just don't have a paper copy in here. We do have a PowerPoint to go over some of the highlights. Now, since the time that we started preparing for this meeting, there have already been changes to the budget, but this is the preliminary, so...
You can call it a work in progress.
Work in progress. Chief Nye, could you pull up the PowerPoint onto the screen? And then you got a screen share. So, good luck. You may have to minimize that to do start screen sharing and then pull it up onto the presentation screen. Stand by. You got a screen share, yeah. And screen share the one with the Zoom up on it right now, because that's the one that it will present to. Not the one with the presentation, the one with the Zoom on it. Center, top center, top center, center. Yeah, bring it over here. Okay.
It's above our pay grade.
Fixed up.
Not my highest this time of day.
We got this.
So, budget presentation. So, Mary Kay is here as well, our finance officer. So, I can talk through this, and then if we have any questions, we can cover it. So, starting out, projected revenues for 2025. This is a breakdown of our projected revenues. At the top, obviously, is the tax levy revenue, as calculated with the county last week. This number tends to change a small amount incrementally right up to the end. Below that, leasehold excise tax in lieu of, so the ferry pays us a fee, parks pay us a fee, the school districts does, and the hospital contract is listed there as well. That's the hospital payment. It's a contract we have with Whidbey Health for first response services. Investment interest is predicted to be $32,000. CPR registration, $4,000. Bringing us to a total revenue of $9,383,000. The beginning balance is our calculated capital reserve and contingency. So that's what we anticipate we'll bring forward next year. A reminder, any revenue that isn't spent during the year goes into capital reserve. The total fund balance with all of those put together is just over $11 million. Can you forward arrow one on the keyboard, please? Okay, now we're looking at an expense breakdown pie chart. I apologize, these are very small across the bottom, which is why we did call outs on the screen. So you can see our fire suppression is at 40%, administration's at 18, capital is 27.92. That's a high amount for capital. That is because we have accounted for some apparatus and land purchase this year. And then you can see the rest of those as we go down through. This may lead you to the next question. What are the changes in these departments year over year? Which we'll cover. Do you have any questions so far? Okay. Next slide. Okay, this is a 5-year revenue versus expenditures. These colors are not pleasant to contrast with each other. Suffice it to say, revenues are tracking expenditures, more or less. Okay, next screen. Okay, so the total unallocated revenues for the year 2025, we take that total revenue number, which is all of our accounts and our income. That was that $11 million. Our total expenses, $9.2 million. And our total unallocated revenue at the end of the year is then $2 million.
I have a question here.
Yeah.
If we go back to the slide that included our total balance, I guess I'm curious at the term unallocated revenue, because that includes
it's
this one, the chart expense comparison 2024 to 20. No, that's not it. Sorry. The one that gave us the 11 million and all the revenue. We could just look at. Nope. We missed this
one. Okay.
Can we still go back to that other chart? The one that listed out the, okay. Maybe it was slide 2. There we go. Okay.
Okay.
Because this says our total revenue is 9.3 million. And then we have a beginning balance of capital reserve and contingency, which is a total fund balance. Now, if we move forward, it's calling that is that the 11 million that it's calling revenue? Because I would say I'm not sure that's revenue.
Yeah, it's all that is where it's confusing, is to call it revenue, but it's revenue and that we're carrying it forward from the previous year because we're starting with a zero balance.
Okay.
So revenue isn't a perfect term for it. It's revenue and beginning balance of capital reserve and contingency.
Just because I still feel new to these terms, but understanding that we keep money aside for our capital, that's not revenue per se.
Correct. Okay. It's not really revenue as far as new money coming in, but as far as we're starting the balance with a zero and we're allocating funds into accounts or expenditures.
Okay. So then if we move back to the slide we were on last, I just want to make sure I understand the paths of this money. I didn't know it was going to be so slow.
So while we're waiting for that to show up, that 1.8.
Bring it up here. I can.
Oh.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay, which one do we want to be at?
The next. We missed this one. So maybe we should get a. Do we want to discuss this one before we go to the next one?
Yep.
Okay.
We can do that. So this is the expense comparison year over year by department. Department meaning category of the budget. And so this is just showing the change year over year for these areas. This is a total percentage change of 35%. Capital being the biggest of which at 139.
And that's reflected by the fact that the levy lift passed. So when we have that increased revenue that can go to capital.
Correct. And then additionally, we have some items that we've put in the budget for the past few years that we haven't ended up purchasing. And so that's continuing to carry over. Let me know when you're ready or if you have any questions.
Mr. Towers, we're ready.
Okay. So the unallocated will make more sense here. So this is coming up with where does the $2 million not being spent in the year go? And this is the breakdown for that.
Those are very similar, identical numbers.
Yeah, it's bringing both of those up to the 5% of the operating cost for the year. Good.
Yeah. And that's it.
Let's see. I think it stopped. Okay. Looks like we are back off of screen share. I can pull up that 2025 budget on the screen if you guys would like to review that in detail or had any questions on it.
This would be the 3-page one included in our books and also that we were emailed the budget changes. Is that?
There's the budget changes one, but I believe you also received a regular budget, Springbrook budget.
But that is basically the same.
Okay. Yeah, this is it has all the same data.
Commissioner Noble, since you've been attending the budget meetings, you're on the budget commission committee. Would you like to add anything?
Well, first of all, I commend the process, the back and forth between various staff and the chief was showing a real collegial approach. There was nobody grandstanding. It was more, here's what we're facing. Speaking as a commissioner, there were a lot of very specific things that they, were germane to the operation of the district, and I'm not about to insert myself in those conversations because it was clear that if there are sides, which they really aren't, but the various things were presented, and the process, again, speaking as somebody representing the public interest, was rewarding. I was, as I mentioned earlier, I wanted to make sure that we were dealing with the bunker gear issue was being addressed. And I did have several questions about, what are we doing to secure our stations for earthquake movement. But all in all, the process was worthwhile. And I think the public is well served by the give and take that I observed during this various meetings we had.
Any further comment from our
question on the full-time firefighter wage? This is assuming taking on how many additional in 2025 and at what stage in the year?
No, it was three at the first of the year, I believe. Is that how we calculated that? Yep, first of the year.
So three at the first of the year.
And so, Chief, inform the rest of the board as well as me that we've programmed or consider the levy lift dollars coming in, but we don't know the exact amount that's going to be until the year closes.
Correct. I think we're pretty close now. We initially, when we started the budget process, we had a number that was about 300,000 greater than where we ended up by the completion of our template. So there's a form that could be somewhat complex for calculating our revenues through the regular tax levy each year. However, the good news is this year it's pretty simple because it's the first year of the levy. Every year after that, it gets a little bit more complicated because we're tied to a certain amount of rise each year.
A question for you, Chief. Under Assistant Chief wages, we 24 we budgeted 210,618, and in 25 we're seeing just shy of 142,000. So I was curious why we're going down that much.
I believe these are reflecting the changes in titles at that point.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you can, I think the board would like to, have an explanation of that because that's a significant decrease. I'm assuming that it's a change in title, but then the...
Yeah. So I could actually, now that I had to think about it a second, and what I realized is assistant and deputy chief are the same line.
Right.
On this, and we actually have two people this year since the board approved the changes in rank, and Chief Dilley was promoted to deputy chief. That made two people on the assistant chief line for the year, and then going into next year, as Chief Nye retires, we'll just have one assistant chief.
Okay.
Yep.
The last thing I want to do is us to approve something that jeopardizes one of our white shirts.
Right. Gonna have to have you go. We don't have any more money. I would.
Yeah.
Volunteers tribute. I will say one of the things that I would like to work with Archbright on as soon as possible, and we're getting late in the budget process, there could be some amendment, is to review all of our non-represented salary scale. So that may have an impact depending on what the board approves, I present to the board. But I think when we look, we have a compression issue between our non-represented chief officers and the represented staff in, what does that mean? Sounds kind of like complicated. That means that a new chief officer would make less than a lieutenant. And that's skipping two ranks. So
we should fix that.
We have a compression issue there. And we know that. And that's one of the reasons that I wanted Archbright to be able to come in and help with that. The reason that that's been delayed is we didn't know if we were going to pass the levy. And so having passed the levy, I think we're in a position to know we're no longer in austerity measures.
Yeah. Question for the budget committee. Does everyone regard this year's budget as being a reasonable budget? We've been trimming and cutting pretty viciously for the last 3 years. Mm-hmm. Is this more by way of a normal budget? Because if we're using this as our baseline for 5 and 10 year plan, that's that could impact it quite significantly.
I think so. When it comes to operational costs, I think it's generous, and there are several lines that were quite high because we were holding off on some of the spending. Mm-hmm. When you look at the breakdown of our budget overall, we still spend comparatively little on personnel. Yep. And I think in the coming years, you know, even as we get through this period where we're going to be purchasing more apparatus and addressing the station issues, personnel are going to be coming more and more to the forefront as we...
Oh, yeah.
And that's where right now we still actually have more room than most districts as far as operational spending on equipment, training budget, things like that. I feel it's at a healthy place, and we mostly did what was requested. Where we cut back on some of these were areas where I think we would be hard pressed to spend the money this year. We're doing a lot. For instance, you're buying some specialized equipment. How much of this can be implemented this year by the staff? Those were some of the things that reduced spending.
When you say this year, 24 or 25?
25, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, 24, we cut. One area I do have a little bit of concern is having enough for stations for things that come up. If we have an issue with, you know,
whatever,
lighting, carpeting, appliances, things like that, we really don't have, you know, that would be kind of a contingency.
Is this something that we should include into the budget for 2025 so that it keeps going forward and put an allocation for each station to cover that?
Might be wise. I think between now and the next presentation, we'll circle back with Chief Dilley and see where his thoughts are on the stations. But yeah, might make a lot of sense.
That would.
Could I get a quick review of our timeline for the budget? I know we need to approve it by a certain deadline in order to get it to the county on time.
So today, this has been our preliminary budget review,
and we need to approve it by
the beginning of November. At the November board meeting, we'll approve it, and then we have to have it to the county. I don't know the time schedule in front of me, but I believe November 30th is kind of the end-to-end for that.
So if we have it on the normally scheduled meeting, November, we've got two plus weeks.
So we're currently on track.
We're on track. Okay. We're better on track than we were last year.
Very good.
We did this presentation October 30th last year, and you didn't receive. You were this time. We did send the preliminary budget on October 1st, and so there have been some changes since then. But we sent it on October 1st, which is the scheduled date So we're a little bit ahead this time.
All right. And so at our next meeting, we'll have a more fine-tuned budget reflecting some of the comments and further information on what we expect.
Correct. Okay. We'll get that out to you ahead of time.
Well, I think you could say it's a final budget unless something comes up that we bring forward. I mean,
right.
Basically,
yeah,
what,
correct.
You, what you'll send to us, it's we'll have time to chew on it, and then it's up or down, and it has to be an up.
Yeah, and the board will also need to approve the levy documents at that time.
That's exciting.
It'll be important to have that.
I was going to say that's a vote that I think we know how that's going to turn out.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate the overall health of what this currently presents, and I hope that we can continue to do so that our residents of our district can feel that we're being good stewards of their taxpayer dollars. All right. Any further budget conversation? Are we ready to move on to Station 31 server UPS?
Sounds good to me.
All right. Looks like there is an estimate here.
Yeah, there's not a lot of documentation along with this, but we had a server or a backup, an uninterrupted power supply. So a device that makes sure that the computers and everything has power all the time. Broke, and it was down for some time. It's down in a major way now to where some of our critical functions are not getting power at Station 31. So what does this mean? This means we have to replace it at the tune of about $15,000. We can do this within the building maintenance services line, which is 504830. We can do this within budget, but this is an unexpected budget cost, which was not explicitly budgeted for. So would ask the board for approval for this expenditure.
Make a motion to approve the expenditure.
And I'll gladly second it.
Very good. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The ayes have it. The motion carries.
So, Chief, what's the bucket of bucks that this is coming from?
Building maintenance services.
Okay. So there is that fund will be almost exhausted by the end of this expenditure. Okay.
That fund will be on a shoestring budget, as they say.
All right, moving right along, our last new business item is a discussion of the All-County Fire Commissioner meeting. There has been a draft agenda sent around. I do think we can benefit from both input from our fellow fire commissioner boards. I know there are a few items that we as a board are interested in discussing, which include working with the county to expedite permitting process, ensuring that we are on the same page with Would Be Health. And I had one other item that is eluding me right now, Chief.
We were going to talk about the fire marshal.
The fire marshal, thank you. So those are the three discussion items I have for that meeting. I look at this as an opportunity. It's something that used to happen, and I kind of keep stoking the fire to ensure that we as a county fire commissioners or fire commissioners within the county can come together and discuss our common interests to potentially leverage those interests in a more powerful way.
Constructive way.
Constructive way. Thank you.
I'll add an item that I think we should at least have discussion at that meeting and maybe talk about putting it on our strategic plan. And that is the housing, and we'll speak for South Whidbey, is more and more expensive. So the question would be whether or not there is a need for, like, use the term workforce housing, but the ability for, and let's say SWIFI, if to be able to construct some type of housing for the if we're losing people who might otherwise want to be part of SWFE because they can't afford to live here. I don't know. It's something we should talk about. One of the ways to determine whether it's an issue is through conversation with chief and with our troops, with the applicants that come forward. But I wanted that to be an item that we could meeting in November to at least have that discussion and see whether or not it is a problem for other districts. If it is, what steps could be taken, whether or not there's some need to have some county or state involvement. But I think it's an issue that is germane to our ability to make sure we have the staff, firefighters and EMTs that we need. And I think it's not unique to South Whidbey. So I would like that to be a discussion item. And then moving forward, we have our strategic plan, and at least have that as an item on our strategic plan to review this to see whether or not there is a need. And then from there, what steps we can take.
So we do have this on the calendar for November 6th. I understand Commissioner Towers is not available to attend. It's certainly not. It's a different type of meeting. It's a bit more conversational. I do hope that we are able to come out of it with some action items as a...
November 6th. Check my calendar. I should be able to meet the November 6th.
I can tell you the last one, it was a big yawner for me. There was no... I saw no value from the last meeting. So we're going to come with some action items. And I don't know what the others, but those four items that we have should generate some real conversation.
I believe the challenge is simply that it's not in an RCW or anywhere that as a county that fire commissioners come together. And as I stated, historically they used to. I think they gathered somewhere on a regular basis up in Oak Harbor. And I've been driving for this simply because I'm curious and because I do believe that there are matters that we may not be able to achieve just as a board without joining forces with our other county boards. The other two agenda items I think are worthy of discussion is the ICOM role. We have amended the bylaws. That is something that is going to have to go through legal counsel for every fire district and every entity that participates in with ICOM. And I also had written a draft, I believe it was last summer, for a charter for this entity to kind of help codify what it is that we're up to. So I will need to dust that off and hope that we can bring that forth as well. And I will be very curious to hear if there are other action items or discussion topics from the other boards that they would like to bring forward. So Secretary Schroeder, thank you very much for getting the ball rolling on this. Any other discussion topics for that meeting?
I'm sure I'll think of some, but
all right.
I think we've got enough to fill a 2-hour meeting.
Well, I can tell you from the last one, this is going to be a sea change because there was really nothing coming out of that last meeting.
Well, it was our first time doing that in a long time, is my understanding.
Yeah, I understand.
Very long time. We've had one in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm. But I do hope that we can see positive change in terms of who we are as boards within the county.
The talk is important because every member of the board has strengths and then they have contacts with some of the state county people that we might not have.
I think there will be value in discussing how we can achieve some of the goals that that we have. So, all right. Do we have any announcements to share? Hearing none, we'll move on to comments for commissioners.
I do not have any at this time, Commissioner Noble.
And I've already broached the subject that I wanted to talk about at this point, but I'll just put it for the record. We need to explore the issue of housing for A, determine whether or not there's a need. Are we losing some potential applicants from the other side? So it's really scope it out, but it should be something that we might want to at least have as an item in our strategic plan. So that whole issue, it's going to take some talk, but I just feel it's important that we, with the price of housing, I mean, I know with the value of my wife's and my house, we would not be able to purchase it today, you know, after 20 years. So I think it's a real issue and we need to be on top of it. And whether it's bigger than SWIFI, but it needs to be brought forward with other stakeholders.
All right. Commissioner Towers, any comments at this time?
No comments at this time.
Okay. The next orders of business are two executive sessions, one for employee evaluation and another for realty discussion. Point of order, do we need to parse out time for each one, or can we do one block of time for both?
Let's do one block.
One block of
time? We're big kids. We can do it.
Okay. And how much time do we believe we need for these sessions? It is currently about 7 o'clock, exactly.
Well, I think at minimum a half hour.
A minimum a half hour, so let us reconvene at 7:30. Okay. Yes, please.
Oh, there it is.
It is 7:30. We need more time for our executive session, so we are extending until 7:45. It is 7:45. We have concluded our executive session. We have no action to take as a result of our discussions. At this time, I would be open to a motion to adjourn.
So moved. Let's go home.
Seconded.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Let's get out of here. Thank you, everybody, for